Hi there, and welcome to the One Pres Pod, a podcast for First Presbyterian Church in Fort Smith. On this podcast, we talk about all things related to faith and the life of followers of Jesus. Join us.
Hey there, everybody. It's Reverend Tasha Blackburn, and I'm back with our second in the series of the great ends of the church, or what we're calling the church's job description. And I'm here with the other Reverend Blackburn. Hello there.
Well, hi there, Tasha. It's so nice to be with you today.
Okay. Yes, I'm here with Phil today. And we are going to look at the second part of the job description of Christ's church. And so tell us what that is, Phil.
Well, this week we're going to talk about the shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship of the children of God. Last week, as a reminder, if you're just getting caught up, we talked about the proclamation of the gospel for the salvation of humankind. So if you haven't listened to that one, they're all kind of a companion to one another, and they all kind of relate to one another. So I do encourage you, if you're going to listen to one of these.
Yes, but you can listen to them in whatever order you'd like. So yes, that was last week, the first one, and today, shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship of the children of God.
You know, what I think is interesting about these great ends is they're just all one sentence, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty loaded. And this is one of the most challenging, I think, to capture because you're dealing with several different terms. They're somewhat anachronistic. Remember, these were written in 1910. So you have to define a lot of stuff. You've got to define shelter, nurture, spiritual fellowship, and then you have to define children of God, right?
Yeah.
So whereas the proclamation of the gospel for the salvation of humankind, it's interesting here the distinction. They used humankind there with proclamation, but here they used children of God in it, which makes me kind of think, in my mind, in my way of thinking about this particular one, I think about this as an internal.
Yeah, this is the insider one.
Yes.
This is the church family.
Yes.
One.
Yeah, I think it is the church family one. And it's not to say that you don't offer these things in some way, but truth be told, most of them can't be offered outside of the community.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be inside of the community. Because as we think about this one, obviously first, shelter, right? Like, they're not talking about a roof over your head here.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about a safe space from the storm.
Mm-hmm. Sanctuary.
A sanctuary. Mm-hmm. A safe harbor, some place where you can come to get reoriented, a bit of relief from kind of the battering, frankly, that life can be. I know none of us understand that today in the 21st century.
Life is easy.
Life is
sailing.
Easy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have washing and machines now, and
so it's all handled.
It's all handled. Yeah, it's really all handled. You know, when these were written, most people were still riding a horse. So things are great now.
Yeah.
So
yes, the shelter piece of it is that idea of sanctuary, of a safe space, of a separate space, you know, that you can seek refuge in for a few moments.
Yep.
And so church, part of church's job description is to provide that sanctuary.
Right.
And then part of their description is to provide the nurture.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of nurture, I think of also pair it with nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's to provide, I need that fill up, right? I had a lady at the door, I could name names, but I won't, although I don't think she'd mind. But I had a woman at the door on Sunday, and she said, I come here every week because I need to get filled up, and right about the end of the week, I'm empty again, and I got to come back. And that's nurture, you know, that Jesus' church is supposed to be about that business of not only providing the sanctuary, but then kind of once you're in the safe space, providing care and tending, right? And care and feeding, sometimes literally.
Well, and let's slow down just a touch. So like on the shelter piece, right, I think it's important, if it's supposed to be a sanctuary and it's supposed to be a refuge from the ways of the world around us and the difficulties of life, then that needs to inform our attitude when we step in the doors.
Yeah.
If you're angry, like out in the world,
yeah,
you need to calm down. before you come into the church and start interacting with people.
Yeah.
This is not that.
Yeah.
I think we see this a lot today. People think about politics so much and they spend so much time immersed in that, that then they go out into the world and it's on their mind all the time. Don't do that.
Well, or they start to see every other piece of their life in the same categories that politics provides. Mm-hmm. And for goodness sakes, our families are not politics. Our lots of our lives are not in those same categories. And church certainly isn't.
It certainly
isn't. It's a whole different category. It's a whole different language. Mm-hmm. So I would even kind of amend what you said a little bit. If you are angry, come on in, but use that hour
to reset.
To really acknowledge what's going on with you and be honest about it, even if it's all internal, you and God, you know? Because the hope and the prayer is that you don't walk out in the same way as you came in.
The church should not leave you angry.
Yeah.
It really shouldn't. It should leave you sometimes, you know, kind of righteously challenged. Maybe.
Yeah.
But it should never leave you angry. And you got to think about, we're in a community here and people are coming here for sanctuary, for shelter. So make sure we're all a piece of that, both receiving and giving that piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think shelter is really important. Nurture. It's interesting that you thought of it in the nourishment sense. I thought of it in the parenting sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you nurture a child, right? Like in your...
I'm the last to think in a parenting sense. Yeah.
I know that about you.
So yes, okay, say more about
but
that.
But I think of it in a parenting sense of like you nurture a child to adulthood, right?
Yeah.
And what you do as part of your nurture is you tend to the needs of that child, but you also tend to the kind of person of that child in a nurturing way. You're helping them to grow. You're helping them to explore. You're helping them to learn about the world. You're teaching them boundaries. You're doing all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the church does that for the spiritual self.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about it is it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nurture is something that happens over time. And really a long time, like as a parent, if you think about it, that image, you don't ever stop being a parent until somebody's dead, right?
Yes.
So you're nurturing, in some way, you're forming that other person your whole life. And so to me, this piece is helpful for thinking about the ongoing process that all of us are undergoing and all of us are participating in. Again, it's very symbiotic.
And we aren't all in the same place on
it.
But it doesn't mean we aren't in a path of growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
We are in a stage of development in our faith.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, the sort of elementary school phase is not better or worse than the middle school phase of our growth and faith. They're just different, and they're on different spots of it, and how we come together as Christ's body to nurture wherever somebody is on it.
So can you think of a time in your life where the church nurtured you?
Oh my gosh. I mean, you know, my entire growing up, they nurtured. I mean, they've never stopped nurturing me, real honestly, the church. But as some of you listening know, I had the same pastor for my whole childhood. He was the pastor of that church probably 26, 27 years. And my mom worked for the church part-time. And so there was part of that too. But that entire community, it's like I was in part theirs, you know? Everybody knew I was my parents, you know, or whatever. But when I came to church, it's like I was everybody's too.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody... in the best sense of this, everybody had a say, kind of, in that everybody was rooting for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would come into church and it's like everybody was rooting for me in my life, but also in my faith life. You know, somebody who would step up and teach, you know, 9-year-old Sunday school, they were rooting for me. I remember a man named Jim McAdams, he taught the high school class. And we were no fun. I mean, I'm just going to say this out loud. We were no fun. And here he walked in every Sunday, you know, to hang out with us. So there were just messages given both subtly and passively, and also actively and not subtly, you know, real actively, that you're ours, mm-hmm. you know, and we're yours. And I have never felt that way in any other group than the church.
Yeah.
This idea that you're ours.
Yeah, and that is people are going to honor that idea mm-hmm. with their time, mm-hmm. with their commitment, mm-hmm. with their relationships, mm-hmm. With their attendance to you as mm-hmm. a person, as a specific human.
Mm-hmm. Is there a time you've ever felt nurtured by the church?
Well, I'll tell you one that I was thinking about. The book I'm reading has made me think about influential women in mm-hmm. my life, and one that I thought of was our theology teacher, Cindy Rigby.
Yeah.
So you go to seminary. You don't really know what to expect.
Or what you're doing.
And you show up on the first day of something called Systematic Theology 1.
Yeah.
And you walk into the room and there's all these other people and you're like, I did college. Is this just going to be like college? Like, I know I like the Bible. I know I like church. I know this is important to me, but I don't know what's next. And Cindy walks into the room and she goes, you know what she said.
Yeah.
Words about God.
Yeah, and she like held her hand.
Words about God? And I thought to myself, yeah, how do we do that?
I don't know.
What am I going to, am I supposed to know the answer to that? And that class was one of the most engaging classes of any subject I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
And that class was brought to me not just by her.
Yeah.
But she was the church's embodiment uh-huh. of the fidelity to the idea of educating new pastors in the doctrine of the church.
Yeah.
They had educated her. They had informed her. They had identified her. They had hired and called her. They would later ordain her as a pastor. And they had said, this is who we are going to give to you. Mm-hmm. to do this work. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff went into Cindy, and Cindy brought a ton to it herself.
Yeah.
But to me, that embodies the idea yeah. of nurture.
All
right?
All these little seeds planted all the way along so that this part of the path could be watered
yes,
and grow.
All the way yeah. through to get to that point. And I think about how different my seminary experience would have been. We had some really bad professors.
Yeah, okay.
They weren't theology professors.
Yeah.
And they weren't preaching professors.
Yeah.
And I think, and I mean this as humbly as possible, I think it shows in our ministry
yeah.
that we had our strongest teachers in those areas. And some of our worst in pastoral care.
Which also shows, sorry, everybody. Oops.
But to me, you know, I think of childhood, of course, but to me, that idea that we're going to, the church, the way the church nurtures a human and nurtures different humans at different stages of life in different ways, to me, speaks to this purpose. You can't anymore just drop some rando into Systematic One than you can drop some rando into your high school youth group class, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The church, by and large, doesn't do that. The mm-hmm. church does it with intentionality. Jim was the right man for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you were growing up.
Well, and I was going to say, what I love about you telling that story and the way our stories differ is, to me, this shows two really big strains, mm-hmm. really big opportunities within church for the nurture mm-hmm. of the children of God. Mm-hmm. And we may not think of either as it, but I want to point out the categories. The one is the one you might have thought of, which is kind of the story I told, which is being kind on mm-hmm. Sunday morning, right? Asking about someone who doesn't talk much, you know, going and developing a relationship, being honest with them, sharing, we'll talk about spiritual fellowship in a minute, but sharing that with them, okay? That is a bit huge route to nurture mm-hmm. of the children of God. And the other huge route is the one we might not think of as much, which is what led to the end result with Cindy on that first day of class. But it involved a lot of meetings and a lot of agenda and minutes written, yes. right? Somebody had to have a meeting to see if she's fit to go to seminary. Mm-hmm. And I gotta drive in for this meeting. It's 2 hours away and we have an agenda. It's a long agenda. It is a lot of what we kind of joke about, the sausage making, right? That cannot feel very spiritual in the moment, or not even feel like, oh my gosh, where is Jesus in this, right? But there's that whole strand of being church together that end result very much may be what you nurtured all the way along, whether you did it fully with your heart in it or fully acknowledging the deep spiritual moment of it. You just went to the meeting. You showed up and you participated and you brought it forward so that someone could be nurtured.
Yes. And to me, both of these, and we'll get to this in spiritual fellowship in a moment, it's vital we understand this. We do both receive and give shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship. You have to understand it as both.
Yeah.
You can't give it if you don't receive it,
and
you shouldn't receive it if you don't give it.
Yeah.
This is where the idea of the church as product or institution,
or some sort of cafeteria system that you can just pick and choose.
It breaks down.
Yeah.
The nature of the specific relationships that happen within the church amongst the children of God, I think are why this is such a powerful end on our list. Because these are distinctive things, I think, that you wouldn't say that the mission, this is not a dig, you wouldn't say that the mission of Walmart is to shelter, nurture, or provide fellowship to anybody.
No.
Those may happen incidentally.
Yeah.
But that's not the mission.
I may really get along with the Walmart greeter.
Right. Or I may work there and have fellowship with my coworkers, or I may go in there when I'm in the middle of nowhere and my car's broken down and I find a Walmart that's open and I go in. But that's not their purpose.
Yes.
Right? There's almost nothing that holds these purposes.
Yeah. Our purpose.
It's our purpose. They happen incidentally in other places, but it's the purpose of the church to create these type of relationships.
I think it's an interesting way to even walk in the doors, is to even walk in the doors and say, how has this place sheltered and nurtured me?
Mm-hmm.
And be grateful for, you know, really reflect on that, be in prayer about that, in gratitude about that, if it can come to mind that it has, you know, which hopefully it has. And then respond out of that. Mm-hmm. Okay, well then, doggone it, somebody who walks in today is going to know because of my actions that this is a place of shelter and nurture.
Yeah.
It has been for me, and doggone it, it will be for someone else because it has been so important.
Right.
It's both.
It's both.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we should probably talk about spiritual fellowship for just a moment. But
this is a hard one.
It's very difficult. And I think trying to understand what it means by having spiritual fellowship, because what's the difference between fellowship? Like, we have a fellowship hall here at the church. And this is where you and I always go back and forth on these, and I'll give you my hot take here, dear listener. I don't like church-wide gatherings.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Tasha and I go back and forth on these. I think we check off the fellowship part, but I don't think we check off the spiritual part of those very well.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that we do, which is nice, but I don't know that it moves the needle on the spiritual piece.
Yeah.
And that's where I always get hung up. Like, to me, spiritual fellowship involves kind of a radical authenticity. You know, I'm not talking about oversharing, but I'm talking about the church should be the place. If Jesus knows us fully, then we should be most fully known by the people that we follow him with. So the church.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not talking you come in on a Sunday morning and be like, well, I have a huge alcohol problem.
Yeah.
But if you get to the point where you need help with your alcohol problem, you should start with these people and you shouldn't be afraid to tell them.
Yeah, hopefully this can be the place of sanctuary
and
nurture that led to the spiritual fellowship.
Correct.
Yeah. The two of them lead to the third.
And then... back to that symbiotic relationship, we need to be prepared to say, okay, all right, what can I do to serve you and help you through this difficult time? Conversely, if you've had a great joy, like this should be a place to share and celebrate that joy. Spiritual fellowship to me means we talk about more than the weather, more than chit chat, more than how the Razorbacks did. I enjoy all these topics, by the way.
Weather and football are two of your favorites.
Two of my favorites.
They are, if you add in gas prices, there's your top three.
Well, we're right there then. I enjoy all these topics, but to me, a spiritual conversation gets to more than that. There's an intimacy to it, and it all happens under the banner of faith, right? This is not therapeutic.
Well, and sometimes it's said, it's not really a joke, unfortunately, but I guess we can laugh about it, that there's more Jesus talk in the basements on Wednesday night in churches at these AA, NA, GA meetings than there is in the same, you know, than there is in the fellowship hall on Sunday. Unfortunately, people laugh at that because there's a speck of truth in it, or can be, and that's something that we are always working on. It is always easier to have just simple fellowship,
safe
fellowship. But for goodness sakes, if we can't develop deep spiritual ties here, it's our job description,
right?
And it's less safe, and like you say, most people probably won't lead with it.
And listen, I'm not advocating here. There's 130 to 160 people in church on a Sunday morning here between the two services. You don't need to go up to every single one of them. But over time, you should have formed some relationships here that are a little bit blocked out differently than some of the other ones in your life for some of these things. And you know, as we kind of put a coat on this conversation, I think it's important to recognize it's this specific end of the church why I was excited to hire Maria, our emotional wellness coordinator. Like Maria's presence here, somebody who's trained in mental health care and can help people process through things, is a piece of this. Like the church, we take mental health care seriously. We are not a place that doesn't believe in psychology and therapy and those sorts of things. And so bringing that component into this piece where it's like, hey, sometimes you need more than just a friend or even a pastor. You may need more. And there's a skill set here that we lack, that's lacking largely in the community, and it should exist within the church in this age, in this time.
It is worthy.
It is.
You know, it is not a hushed, doesn't need to be a hushed push off to the side subject. It's about being full, our full human selves.
Yeah, if we can provide a space where people can come and talk with somebody to help them with anxiety, fear, worry, anger,
grief,
To just process through those things with somebody who brings a different skill set to it, that's part of this, right? And so anyway, I don't think that when they wrote it in 1910, they were thinking about that. But hey, that's how things have evolved. So
I think they were mostly just taking laudanum. Is that how you say that? Weren't they all taking laudanum?
Oh yeah,
that's in those old books.
Isn't that like an opioid or something?
I think so.
Well, that probably worked.
And Sherlock Holmes would go to opioid dens.
Yeah.
You know, it was a thing. Anyway, you know, it is interesting because as we go on, there's six of these. I do think, as I'm recalling, this is the most internal. This is the most within the community. As we began this session talking about, almost all of our work is to be public. You know what I mean? Is to be outward facing, is to be for the whole community, for the whole place, you know? This one really is how we are to
be together,
to care for one another. This is how we care for one another in here. Almost all the others are going to look outward.
Well, they're going to at least live in both places, right?
But we don't want to forget about it.
No, there has to be. You should walk into church and it should feel different than any other place you go. It shouldn't feel like any place else. And that is not because of the architecture or the music. It's because of the vibe and the relationships and the way we are together in a unique way under the Lordship of Jesus.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Tasha, we've solved it. Shelter, nurture, exactly. Spiritual fellowship, children of God, a perfect bow put upon that.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, if we follow the Book of Order list, then next week will be the maintenance of divine worship. So that's one that, again, we're back to both ways, right? Like, anyway. So, final thoughts today?
That's it. But maybe next week we will start with your three favorite topics, which are weather, football, mm-hmm. and gas prices.
Any of those would
be
fine.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yep. All right. It shall be so. Until next time, everybody. Thank you for listening to the One Prez Pod. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast wherever you found it. And go to onepres.org for more information about First Presbyterian Church. Until next time, peace.